Welcome to an Emergency Escape Collective podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. I'm joined today by Johnny Long, Cosmo Catalano, Ronan McLaughlin. That was one of the most dramatic days of racing we have seen in a long time. Of course, I'm talking about today's stage of the Vuelta a España, finishing atop the Angliru, and had very little to do with the actual performances, I would say. So here is where we are right now. Sepp Kuss has a GC lead of 8 seconds over teammate Jonas Vingegaard. He came into today's Angliru stage with 29 seconds. The 21 seconds gone are the result of the last few kilometers of the final climb. This set off a bit of a firestorm. On one side, racing is racing, made the strongest man win. On the other, a fan favorite, a loyal domestique, poised to take a career-defining victory with, crucially, zero real chance of losing it to anybody but his own teammates. We're going to assume that you watched most of it. If you haven't, definitely go do so. So let's get straight into it. Who wants to have the first take here? Who feels very strongly about? I feel like Johnny, the things you were saying off mic, perhaps, maybe an interesting place to start here.
I was going to suggest Cosmo Ronan with a bit more of an analytical view. I think this is what I said in the Discord when we were watching it, is that no matter what you think, no matter if you think racing is racing or any other sort of bullshit or anything, it is just heartless with seeing Roglic just gunning it off the front, Vingegaard checking behind, being like, yeah, that's my teammate red jersey being dropped by me and my other teammate. It's just heartless. And even GCN afterwards, who are always like pretending that there's rainbows everywhere coming out of every possible sort of crevice imaginable, even they were like, this is just like, they couldn't bear to watch it. It's like watching like puppies being hurled off a cliff. It's just like, just you're attacking your own guy. It's not let the race, the road decide, it's your own teammates. When has this ever been a thing? It's just nuts. The sort of the revisionist history.
I'm not
of how
okay
the
for
works. Sorry, I've already
I'm not okay for hanging,
gone on.
I'm not okay for hanging puppies off a cliff.
And that's what's happening.
That was absolutely horrible to watch. But also, if I think back in time when we were all free Landa because Landa was a stronger rider and had to wait for somebody else, or Froome versus Wiggins and Froome was a stronger rider and had to wait for Wiggins, we can't then, when it's the nice guy, Mr. Kuss, that we should all be calling for his stronger teammates to wait for him. Now, that's not my take on the whole thing, but at that point in time, I was okay with the way it was unfolding and that it looked like the strongest rider was going to win. My opinion changed later, but we'll get to that, I think.
All right, so Ronan is pro puppies on cliffs. Cosmo, what are you
I was just going to point out in those cases, there was clearly a plan. Like, you could see the stronger rider waiting, and they waited. And they made it clear that they were waiting, and the internet had feelings about it. And this did not feel particularly planned. I think we'll talk about it more later. But some of the communications we've had from the team allegedly in charge of this seem to conflict with what actually went down.
I think you're getting to the point I want to get to there, Cosmo, in that, yes, it's the riders' actions that we're seeing, but I think it's a bigger team issue that we're actually seeing unfold here, and it should all be solved before any of this happens on our screens.
All right, so let's get into kind of the details of this communication here. So I mentioned in the little intro there that we had this radio call between Sepp Kuss and, turns out, maybe nobody. Actually, he might have just been talking to himself. So according to the Jumbo-Visma tweet /X, Sepp, in his communication, this is what Jumbo-Visma says, "Go, guys. We later hear from Christian Nierman right after the finish." In fact, we have this audio, so I'm going to prove it to you. He says, "We couldn't hear him."
What was his message at the moment?
We couldn't hear Sepp, and also we didn't see anything because the television was really, really bad. But it is like we agreed in the beginning of the week that that we are still all three going for it. And I mean, I think everybody would like to have Sepp in the lead. But that's one thing. And he is also still in the lead, but they also want to win the stage. And we also agreed to that everybody's allowed to go for it. And I think that's what happened. And yeah, very, very good job and really nice victory for Primoz.
So we've got communication coming in from Jumbo Visma, like sort of PR proper, right, which would be running the team's Twitter account at the time. You know, Grisha Nierman's not sitting behind a wheel of a car tweeting. I hope not. We've got that coming from PR proper, and then we've got Grisha Nierman saying, actually, we couldn't hear anything. And that really does suggest that, you know, to get back to what you were saying, Cosmo, is I think that they just, well, actually, we know this from what Nierman said. They had a conversation at the beginning of the week where they basically decided as a group, everyone can go for it. And that's kind of what ended up playing out. And on the road, there's no actual sort of attempt to change this at all.
Have they had that conversation, though? Because I think there's just much more going on here than who wins the Vuelta. I think it's a power play between Roglic and Vingegaard. And both of them are coming out with these crazy statements that could only be crazier if they were speaking in the third person. had Roglic come out after the stage and say, Roglic wants Sepp to win, but Roglic attack. That is the only way that could have been crazier. Because it just, they're contradicting each other. None of them want to actually be on camera and give an interview, but they're sort of obliged to when the mic is stuck in front of their face, I think. And then they're trying to skirt around the problem. The one thing I do wish is that they would put Sean Kelly on the ground to ask these questions, because I've never seen Sean Kelly, and I've been in Sean's company quite a lot, and I've never seen him care about anything as much as he cares about this three-way battle.
Jumping in real quick here with a little announcement, which is that if things continue as we think they might into Thursday, into stage 18 of the Vuelta, we're probably going to do a live podcast, a live emergency pod for members only on our Discord. So if you're not already a member and you want access to that, head over to escapecollective.com/join. Make sure you join the member tier, not the reader tier. The reader tiers only drops the paywall on the site. Don't have access to things like live podcasts. So probably going to be doing that tomorrow. If you want access and you're not already a member, now's the time. escapecollective.com/join.
I absolutely agree with that. I think you could actually see it today on the ground when you had these interviews. And, you know, Roglic is always pretty slippery. But in addition to not mentioning Koos shouting, go guys, into the radio, he was very kind of noncommittal, like wouldn't really come out and say anything straight. And you had Sepp Koos was interviewed by Contador in English. And he was very much, you know, for the first time ever, I think he said, I want my shot. But then he was like, but, you know, if I'm playing the team role, I can do that. And then immediately afterwards starts just yakety-yakking in Spanish with Contador. Like, that kind of rapport, like, I think Contador has it. I think Kelly would probably have it, too, where riders will open up a little bit more to somebody they know has been in the same spot.
I think we need to get Contador out of there and get Kelly in, because Contador didn't ask a question any of us wanted to know the answers to.
Contador didn't even ask a question. He just made a statement.
Yes.
Let's just really quick, let's listen to what Sepp said, and then I'm also going to play what Roglic said as well right after it, and we can talk about that.
Yeah, it was a position I never expected to be in, and that's the beautiful thing about it. I came in with no expectations, was just looking to help out the guys like always, then came into this this beautiful jersey and all the experiences that come with it, and I discovered a new level of self-confidence, of racing instinct, and that was really, really beautiful. And also with an incredible two guys. I think behind the scenes we work really well together. They're two big champions, and I also want my shot, but I also am happy to work for them when it's called for. So it's been a beautiful experience.
Did you realize when Sepp was getting dropped?
Sorry?
When Sepp Koos was getting dropped, you realized it?
Like I said, I just did my own tempo. I know, I speak with him. He's a weird thing, he's a weird feeling, but he's just, on the climb, everyone goes on such a steep climbs as fast as possible, and then we see.
But Sepp is still in the red, so he's still the leader.
Of course, I said to him, keep fighting, keep believing, and he will make it.
I think it's really interesting listening to that, how firmly and kind of punchily he says the part about wanting his shot and then sort of remembers that he's on camera and needs to slide back into teammate mode.
100%. It was the closest I think we've come to sort of an honest Sepp answer. And I think that one of the things we do know about Sepp as a rider and as a human being is one, he's by all accounts a very nice guy. Two, he's very professional. He's proven that over and over and over again. And so I think that a lot of taking what he says on camera, on mic, at face value, that actually makes it kind of a dangerous thing to do, right? Because he's probably more likely to not tell us exactly what he thinks more often than not. And I think that was kind of the closest we got to his true feelings on the matter.
I wish for the sake of Sepp 10 years from now that he would say what he feels right now, because I can't help but feel that he's sort of the general public can't really help but have the opinion that he's allowing these other two egos to walk all over him in the one shot that he's ever going to have to win a Grand Tour. And you know, he's a phenomenal rider, but at the same time, as much as he's helped these guys win Grand Tours in the past, if he wasn't on this team with these two guys right now, he would not be leading this Vuelta. That's pretty simple. He may be actually, because he may still have been in the same break, may still have got the same time, but they would be dropping him without question on the Angliru, and they would take the red jersey from him. But you know, and that's where the conflict comes in for me is, you know, while if these two guys, Jonas and Roglic, were nowhere on GC, it would be clear cut they would have to ride for Sepp. But the fact that they are on GC, combined with the fact that this guy who is leading has helped them so much in the past, we all feel that they should do the right thing for him, help him win the race that he's never won a race. And
the thing is that we can talk about who's the strongest rider in the Vuelta or whatever, but the context matters of Kuss helping the rest of the guys. Every Grand Tour Jumbo-Visma have won, he's been a huge part of it, and there's been times in the Vuelta when Kuss has dragged Roglic back up to the front group. Like, it's never that clinical and obvious that it's just exercise contest and who is the best exercise throughout the whole thing. It's way more nuanced than that, and I think people lose track of that.
But to suggest that, and I'm mostly just playing devil's advocate here, but
yeah,
to suggest that one of these two guys should give up a Vuelta, okay, you might argue that Roglic should give up a Vuelta considering that he's won like 50
three
in a row.
Yeah.
But Jonas, you know, Jonas having won two Tour de France probably fancies himself as the best Grand Tour rider of his generation. And to prove that, he will have to win the Vuelta at some point. He is now in the third week of a Vuelta within touching distance of the lead with a teammate that he knows he is clearly better than and a mentality that is clearly more killer instinct than Sepp has. I think it's very difficult for any of us to put ourselves in his shoes. But still, I do still think, having said all that, it's a Roglic versus Jonas power play for team leadership in the Tour. And one of the management at some point needs to step in and say, I'm sorry, Roglic, but you fall down every time we make you leader. So Jonas is our leader from now on.
Yeah, let's not forget a little bit of news that we broke right ahead of the Vuelta, which is that Roglic was in discussions and had been approached by Little Trek, formerly Trek Segafredo, just ahead of this race to go be their leader.
Who hasn't?
Right? Well, I mean, at this point, probably every yeah, everybody in the Peloton's been approached by Trek. I think they should approach Sepp, perhaps. Bring the eagle home, Trek. Bring the eagle home.
That's where I draw the line, okay? That's where I draw the line with this.
Do I need to do the Pledge of Allegiance again, Johnny?
It's interesting that, you know, this is the first time in a long time we've had an American contending for a Grand Tour, and here we are, knee-deep in the drama, doing an emergency podcast, and I can't help but wonder if Durango resident Kaylee Fretz feels a little more strongly about this for reasons outside of bike racing.
I'm pretty sure this is the first time we've ever done an emergency Vuelta podcast. We've done loads of Tour Dailies. We've done Giro emergency pods, but Vuelta, not so much.
Very true. Very true.
The thing is, it's not just me, Cosmo. You're making it like it's like all of American bike racing right now. I mean, like, my wife, who doesn't really particularly follow bike racing at all, was like texting me this morning. She's like, what happened? What's going on? Like, she's literally sitting at work doing this, right? And like, our own member Discord is just, it's basically on fire at the moment. Like it is, the servers are on fire. There's so many people in there that it's an important moment, I think, for American cycling. That's not really all that relevant. I have actually been trying to keep myself out of these discussions. We made Johnny write a story yesterday because I know this. Whoa. I cannot be reasonable with this because the kid ski raced with my wife and like, I know his mother. Like it's just not I can't be.
Well, you can just be accused of like nationalism and be like, you only think this because you are American too.
But actually, it's because I like his family.
Yeah, there's many reasons, and the thing is that like we're all talking about this like quite animated and like caring about this, but like it is just bike racing. We have to remember that, but that doesn't mean that we can't get like we can't have feelings about this stuff. All right, men have feelings about bike racing. That's just how it is.
I have never seen such a charged podcast crew in all my time. Everybody is just.
That's why we had to have emergency pod. We had to have emergency pod. Okay.
Taking it back to the race, though.
Yes, let's return.
I thought it was very interesting and perhaps just made the whole thing even worse the way the stage was not decided, but not like celebrated or contested on the line.
Weird.
I know that descent to the finish is tricky, and you could argue you're in the position that you're in until Sepp came along and then disproved that. By overtaking Lando on that descent into the finish line. But there seemed to be no contest for, you know, Roglic basically just from the second he took to the front with however many kilometers to go, stayed on the front of the finish line. And then, you know, if it was all about the stage one for him, he showed absolutely no emotion having won the stage and literally just like lifted one hand. It was that made it worse again for me.
And then the very strange interaction between Sepp and Roglic that was caught on sort of background audio, and they cut to it.
I thought that was strange. Cosmo, you seen more of it than I did, I think.
Yeah, what it looked like to me was that this was immediately after Kuss's family had brought him a tiny birthday cake to the top of the mountain, and he hugged his wife, and he said, "I didn't think I was going to get it, but I held on and won." It was very kind of cute. And in the background, you could see Roglic kind of come up, and I think he sort of gathers that this is like, you know, wife time, and sort of turns and walks away. And I think Kuss sees this, and he's actually kind of wrapping up with his family, goes over, like, grabs Roglic by the arm, gives him a hug, and they have a conversation where they use a very specific phrase, like a weird feeling or something similar. I think this is what Sepp actually says to Roglic, like, "Hey, you know, I had a weird feeling out there, don't worry about it." And then in Roglic's interview, he uses the exact same phrase. He's like, "Oh, you know, he had a weird feeling." It was very much like, He has been given this out to let himself ride the way he rode during that stage.
The way I read that encounter between Sepp and Roglic was more like somebody who had been ostracized from a family but then had to turn up to a family wedding, and it was all like, "I'm here. Let's not have our beef in public here." Bad feeling. Drop. And Roglic didn't actually string two or three proper words together in the whole encounter, which told me that. And then also just the immediate encounter after the finish line where the three Jumbo riders seemingly couldn't even look each other in the face. It was like, you know, 2 days or yesterday even, they're high-fiving and hugging and smiling. And obviously Angliru is a big, big effort that, you know, it may just have been that, you know, they were recovering from said effort, but the whole thing's just weird.
I think the Roglic-based theory is the best theory so far in that. And then it makes it very strange because if anybody takes red off of Sepp, it's going to be Jonas Vingegaard. But Roglic is actually appears to be the one that is like instigating. Right.
Yeah.
And again, the theory is basically that, you know, he's had offers from other teams. We know for a fact, he said this, that he wants to have leadership at the Tour de France in 2024. He is trying to prove to leadership or to other teams or to somebody that he's the one that they should either give him co-leadership with Jonas Vingegaard at Jumbo or potentially slot into a different program, right? The result of that is that then Jonas Vingegaard comes back and says, "Oh, no, I'm not letting you drop me." And so he follows him up the mountain when, according to Vingegaard, he says he'd like Sepp Kuss to win the Vuelta. He said that after today's stage.
Yeah.
So you've got this sort of weird, Sepp is essentially stuck in the middle of this battle between these two sort of greater champions, so to speak, and their fight for leadership, either of this team that they're on right now or to try to prove something to whoever picks up Roglic for 2024.
I agree with that.
The thing is, it's the perfect situation for Roglic though. Like, he was like kind of like smiling and like not like had the weight of the world on his shoulders after the stage, because he knows if he turns a screw, Vingegaard follows him because he can't bear to let him go. And then if they've taken the red off of Kurs, then Vingegaard's in red and takes way more of the heat, even though Roglic is like gently been stoking the fires like the whole time. Like he did a little attack the day before the Angleroo. He's like, he wants to win as bad as Vingegaard. It just so happens there's a bit more of a time gap. So he's there being like, well, this is working perfectly. I've now pissed off Kurs and he's probably more angry at Vingegaard than me. And then team management is just like...
Team management is on-chaining it in the car and F-bombs all over the place.
Grisha Neerman looks like he wants
losing
to be
track of where spare bikes are and all sorts.
Grisha Neerman looks like he'd rather be lying in a dark room miles away from Spain.
Got the biggest mask he could find to cover up his face before that interview.
He had to cut eye holes in it.
Exactly.
The one thing we haven't mentioned is actually Jumbo are making a success of the Trident, where Movistar haven't in the past.
Yeah. So
that's maybe...
that's the thing.
It helps out. Helps out the three best riders of the bike race.
The inner team rivalry has been so intense that we've forgotten how ridiculous it is that these three are just winning the Grand Tour like leaps and bounds higher than every other team. It's kind of their own sort of masking thing.
I mean, as the other non-American in this call, I will ask, did you mean ridiculous or suspicious?
Oh,
let's not go there. We need that's a whole separate emergency.
We have time. No time.
I was just going to point out that we'd be having a very different conversation if we'd seen three Jumbos do like, you know, the Mape Roubaix salute across the line rather than contest the stage. And people would still be upset, but I don't know we'd be doing an emergency pod. So while Jumbo has made themselves the main character, they are maybe looking less like evil people at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's the galaxy brain way to win a like close out a Grand Tour podium is that you don't do it in like a sinister way. You do it in a way that screams incompetence, but behind the scenes you're like, guys, it's perfect. 8 seconds. Oh, I thought you were gonna get it within five. That'd been way more impressive.
Grisha Neerman playing 4D chess with us again.
Man.
Okay, before we wrap up, we don't want to, this podcast, we don't want to be too long here. I do want to address some of these sort of opposing arguments, right? Can we sort of address these, which is the biggest of which is one, well, I think there's a couple here. One, it sounds like the team made a decision early in the week to essentially race each other, right? That's what Neerman said after the stage. I think it was either Vingegaard or Roglic said something similar. It sounds like that is the case. That doesn't really, I don't think, excuse much of anything. Two, Sepp has said a couple different times, like, if they drop me, they drop me. Like, he's actually said, I don't want this Vuelta gifted to me. Can we address the gifts thing? Johnny, I think you did it quite well in your piece now 2 days ago, which is basically that gifts, like, are cycling in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a team sport, but one person wins, which means that the rest of the team gift their legs and their individual chance of victory to another person.
It's really quite simple, actually.
Teamwork, aka collective gifting.
All right, Ronan, argue back.
I like devil's advocate, Ronan. He's fun.
I will argue the fact that it's not a gift if you're
paid
reimbursed.
To do it.
Yes. Mm. For said gift.
Okay.
Is it a gift that I'm sitting here talking to this? No, it's... I'm mostly here because I just wanted to have this conversation, but I'm also paid to be here. So, in no way is it a gift. I don't, you know, I think that logic applies, but it also isn't the logic I would go with in this argument, in that Kuss certainly deserves the backing of the team. You know, all the riders on the team are paid. Some are paid better than others. Kuss has paid very well to be, I presume very well to be a loyal lieutenant in the mountains to these other two riders. But those other two riders are also paid members of the team. And, you know, the team management could sit them down at the beginning of this week. Instead of saying that we fight it out on the road and make ourselves look incompetent, we defend Kuss's lead for as long as he can maintain his lead. If he's dropped while there are other GC contenders nearby, then Vingegaard and Roglic, you're free to race your own race. But if he is still with you two when you have dropped everybody else in the race, then we are paying you this week to do Sepp's job.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fair assessment.
On the first point you made, Kaylee, about the decision taking the start of the week, I would say that's like an anti-decision. It's like if you've got a big patch of like mold growing in the corner of your house and your decision is to do nothing about it. It is a decision, but it's not the same decision as like, how will I fix this problem? Maybe I will get a guy in to sort it out. Maybe I'll move house. You know,
What Jumbo are doing is just avoiding the room. Let's go live in the other room for a change.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah,
that's the bathroom. Like that we don't have another bathroom. Oh, we'll just go outside.
Go in the garden. That argument to me doesn't hold any water because when is this? Yeah, I don't know. I need to not get so het up about something that really, in the cold light of day, I probably won't care about in 3 months.
To totally belabor that metaphor, I think Kuss is doing really well in a very moldy room right now. You look at today's stage, like he clearly knew he didn't have it in the moment where he needed to have it, and the two strongest people rode away from him that happened to be the only two people on the mountain at that point in the race with the same kit as him. Like, there's no help. The team isn't helping you. You're on your own. And what does he do? He looks back. He waits for Landa. He regroups. He goes balls out into the finish and keeps his lead by 8 seconds. Like, I can't imagine a more mentally devastating situation. And to see him just do the sort of cerebral racing he does as a mountain domestique leading the GC race when clearly not as strong as he needed to be was just awesome. Like, I don't want to lose sight of how well he rode in light of all this drama.
Well, and recall that he said that at the finish too. He said that he's grown a lot and that like the racing angle is actually something, the sort of the racing tactics, you know, he's grown in that from that perspective. So he actually said that right before the bit about, you know, I want my own chance. So, I mean, if you read between the lines there, he's like, well, I've actually, these last couple of weeks have taught me, I have learned that I can maybe do this, and I've grown a lot of confidence, he said. And so I think it's an interesting, it's a separate topic, but like where he goes from here is actually quite an interesting question.
I just want to say one thing quickly that I thought of. We talk about, you know, if the others are stronger, they can drop him. Kuss has already raced 2 Grand Tours to help either of them win one already this season. And maybe if he was arriving fresh for this race, then he wouldn't be getting dropped in like the final 2 kilometers.
Johnny, that comes back to your very first point, which is that we can belabor all the sort of logic of this and all the details of this, but fundamentally, what it comes back to, for me anyway, is you just don't attack your own goddamn teammates, right? Like, you just don't do that. And you can say that Roglic didn't attack. He just rode up the way. No, like, they know what's happening. You don't attack your teammates. This is like a sort of like bike racing 101 kind of thing. And bringing me to the sort of final point here before we wrap up. It doesn't really matter what all the details are. It doesn't really matter whether you think this is right or wrong. The one thing that I think we can all agree on, including all the listeners out there that maybe don't agree with some of the other things we've said, is that this is an absolutely massive PR disaster for the biggest team currently in the sport, right? I don't know what it is about winning a lot that makes these teams into entities that are really difficult to cheer for, but this happened during Sky. Less so Ineos because they started to fall off a bit. It's now happening to Jumbo. I think a lot of sort of like non-Dutch, particularly sort of non-Western European fans were kind of neither here nor there with Jumbo. They didn't know a whole lot about them. Maybe they had an individual relationship, sort of like fan relationship with Vingegaard or Roglic or Kuss or something like that. Those opinions are now solidifying around this team and in not a good way.
And the only thing I'd add to that is they're looking for sponsorship. Would you want to put your name on this? Like, it is, you are both a shit show and evil. Hey, we're a great representation for your brand. Who's going to pick it? Elon Musk? Are they going to be X next year?
I think to finish it up, we should all go around and say like a final thing you want to say about the whole thing to cap off an emergency podcast.
I want to say a question I raised in our Slack earlier today, and it gets to the point that I lay the responsibility for all of this with the team management. And what I put into Slack earlier was, if you were Jumbo Visma's directors or management or whatever, sitting the day before the Vuelta started in Barcelona, and you had been offered Jonas Vingegaard being a minute ahead of anybody else outside of your team going into the final 4 days of the Vuelta, would you be happy? And you would be. Or if you were offered Primoz Roglic in the same position, being a minute ahead of anybody else in the race outside of your team, you would be happy. Or if you offered them Sepp Kuss being almost 3 minutes ahead of anybody outside of your team within the race, you would be happy. You probably wouldn't put it together that you've got first, second, and third in GC, but you would be happy if you offered any of those scenarios, because you would be in the red jersey. And what would you do in that scenario if you were thinking logically and responsibly as a team director? You would do the boring right on the front, take no risks, and just bring the jersey home approach that none of us want to see, but that is what they really should be doing. And for whatever reason, they have not made that call. And it could, I think it was last week's placeholders, I said something along the lines that we haven't seen Jumbo mess up in a while, and they're going to somehow pull off the incredible feat of absolutely messing up this Vuelta in a horrible way while also still winning it, which I don't know how anybody, not even just winning it, but probably putting three riders on the podium.
I'll just agree with that. They've managed to, as my final thought, yeah, I mean, they've the only other way that I can think of where you can win a race and lose sort of the PR battle in the way that they have is literally if the person that won the race for you tested positive for doping like the day after, right? Like that's the only other way that I can think of where you end up with as much negative optics while winning, well, technically winning the bike race.
I think this is more along the lines of your a motor built into your frame alerting the authorities to drugs that you're smuggling across the border.
So Cosmo? Yeah, just an absolute PR own goal for me.
Cosmo?
You know, it's as much as I hate to say it, like I mentioned earlier, I prefer this to the orderly finish of three Jumbos at the line. Here we are criticizing everything they do, and yet as a consumer of sport, this is a much better product. I shamefacedly admit.
Definitely. In similar fashion to Jumbo Visma's PR sort of mishap, I would also acknowledge the optics of sort of very American podcast and media thing, do an emergency podcast in defense of American rider. So I'd just like to say for the record that I am both 50-50 on America and 50-50 on nice guys. So that's it.
I was going to say, the only theory that we haven't considered is that actually Sepp Kuss's nice guy appearance is just an act, and actually Jonas and Roglic are just giving back for whatever has happened
he's
in the past.
Trashing everything but behind the scenes. Banging on their door at 3 in the morning.
I don't think there's an ounce of credibility in that theory. I used ounce because we're talking about American.
Dark Sepp Kuss
Thank
memes.
All right, we're wrapping up this emergency pod. We hope you all enjoyed it. We hope you, some of you agree with us, some of you probably don't.
We've gone completely around in circles here, so everybody's going to agree with something we've said at some point.
That's true. If you don't agree with us, the best thing you can do is go to escapecollective.com/join, jump on the member Discord and yell at us. That's what you should go do. You would not be the only person to do that.
I like the fact that people are happy to disagree, though. Even if like the crushing weight of all of the messages are like, go Kuss, I'm glad that people are like, you know what, actually, fuck that nice American guy. I want the weird, sinister European men to just absolutely crush him.
Stand strong.
Yeah.
All right, I'm wrapping it up. Thanks for listening, everybody. You should still go listen to this week's placeholder because it actually has a bunch of non-Vuelta stuff in it. And we will be back potentially with another special episode because whenever Sepp Kuss moves, we do an emergency pod. We're possibly back tomorrow. We'll see. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.